Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to Unblocking Crypto, episode number 157. Hal, great to see you.
Good glad to see you, buddy.
Glad you survived the past 24 or 48 hours when the cryptoverse, because it was a wild one.
Yeah, it's one of those... It's like the Japan carry trade that collapsed on a Sunday, except for this time it was the threat of United States tariffs.
Yeah. So I think what I saw was over $2 billion was liquidated in about 24 hours. What's crazy about that is that's more than what happened in during COVID or during the FTX collapse. Like, this set a new record. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's, I heard that same thing, and that's one of the reasons why I was like, you know what, now's a good time to buy some, enter my position on some MicroStrategy stuff that I was working on. So I, like, first thing, as soon as I could get into MicroStrategy and MSTY, the income ETF based on MicroStrategy options, I jumped on it. And then, actually, my friend texted me and was like, hey, this stuff's crazy, you know, it's happening fast. And I was like, yeah, it's happening fast, and it seems to recover in the same day. So I was like, let's have some confidence that I'm right, and it's going to recover in the same day. And so I managed to get in at what I believe to be a good price. And of course, everything could collapse tomorrow, and who knows? But I'm fully deployed in my MicroStrategy trade to try to replace some real estate investment. Sold some real estate. And I'm going to try to replace the cash flow with MicroStrategy and MSTY. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I was looking at the MSTY. That's really intriguing, right? If you look at the last 4 months, it's done really well from a dividend perspective on what you're getting out of it. So it's something that's on my radar at this point now. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, so my thesis is this. I'm well covered if Bitcoin goes up, I'm good. And if Bitcoin chops around like last year, where it was between 50 and 70,000 all year long, then it makes more sense to have some exposure to an options play where you can kind of capitalize on some of that. You know, and this is all outside of my like Bitcoin cold storage stuff, right? So this is, I'm not selling Bitcoin to make these moves. But I'm like, you know, I'm not playing defense, really. I'm just trying to capitalize on if this thing goes sideways. Like, if it goes down, I don't have much. I don't have much coverage there. If it goes sideways, I don't have much. But now I've got enough MicroStrategy shares that I could, if I see a good opportunity to sell some covered calls and keep the shares and just collect the premiums, then I can do that. And so that's kind of my... That's my play here, is get into the MSTY and let the professionals do a bunch of complicated synthetic covered call strategies and synthetic option plays that I'm not able to do. And then maybe generate some cash with the strategy covered calls. And I don't know how it's going to go, but we'll see.
Yeah. So while we're talking about MicroStrategy, let's keep the theme going with MicroStrategy. This week has been when MicroStrategy has broke their streak. They went from buying Bitcoin for 12 weeks in a row, $20 million in those 12 weeks, which is kind of crazy. And now they've put a pause on it, which is understandable. I guess I don't know how long you can keep buying, but at the same time, they issued their strike preferred stock, I think for like $80 a share, and they upped it from about $250 million to $584 million. So they're going to plan on buying Bitcoin with that. So that's a good thing for them too. And I was watching a little bit about, we just talked about how kind of Bitcoin crashed. You could almost blame it on Jim Cramer. I don't know if you saw that. So he advocated on buying Bitcoin, but not MicroStrategy. And shocker, as soon as he started telling everybody to buy Bitcoin, it has a crash. So,
yeah, just to add a little color on that, they're in a quiet period. Their earnings, their quarterly earnings is this week, so they can't issue more shares with the earnings call coming up. So I think most people expected this to be the time where they don't announce that they bought any more Bitcoin on the at-the-money stuff. So I don't know the details on all that, but that's the way it looks.
I think we expected them not to buy any like in all of January, and then they still bought a ton of it, right? So yeah, I had heard that coming, but it was still one of those things where they just kept buying, and I was like, oh, well, maybe that was just a rumor.
Well, you said 20 billion, right?
Yeah.
So like they had the $42 billion 3-year plan that started in like November. So yeah, they're well ahead of schedule. And yeah, that the STRK, when they upsized that from 250 to almost 600 million, I was like, oh, there's another pool of money that he found that is dying to get a hold of Bitcoin. And he beat everybody to it. He's the first guy. And yeah. So there's one issue, and guess what? They're going to have more behind it, I'm sure. So like, put that on the list of the reasons why I'm like, you know what? Moving from real estate into MicroStrategy plays, like, I feel pretty good about it. Like, I'm part of me is like, man, you're a Bitcoin guy, buy the Bitcoin. But and all these stocks, they might be the altcoin rally of this cycle, because altcoins aren't doing very well.
No.
Like, if you compare things to Bitcoin, like ETH is in trouble. They're in like the high 2000s and Bitcoin's at 100,000. Like the first time Bitcoin was at 100,000, Ethereum was at like 3,600. So they're losing some ground big time. And so I'm kind of like, let's put some chips on the table and see how things go. And then in the worst case scenario, MicroStrategy is going to own a ton of Bitcoin, and I don't think they're going to sell it. And they don't have to.
Well, to kind of tie a couple things to that, at the same time yesterday, we had some really big news. Trump signed an executive order for the creation of American Sovereign Wealth Fund, right? So huge deal. I think the big question is, will it include crypto? And if you look at who's running it, Howard Lutnick, who's the U.S. Secretary of Commerce, go watch any of his past history over the past, less than 6 months, and have him talk about how bullish he is on crypto. He owns hundreds of millions of Bitcoin, and it's only going to go up from here, right? So I think during his Senate confirmation, there was only one senator that questioned his relationship with Tether. And right afterwards, she went out of her way to say that she was a fan of crypto. So it's crazy how much things have changed from where we were, just like a couple of months ago, where everybody was scared of crypto and what the SEC would do. And now you have the heads of all these new appointments from Trump that are probably more pro crypto than anybody else realizes at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, has had great things to say about Bitcoin. I mean, and not just recently. I mean, there's an interview that was circulating this week that from him from maybe 2023, talking about Bitcoin's here to stay. You know, it's a pro freedom cryptocurrency kind of thing. And I mean, I listened to some of his confirmation hearing. I didn't listen to Howard Lutnick's confirmation hearing, but I mean, it's everybody that has been appointed is pro Bitcoin, or at least pro crypto. But these two guys seem to be at the top. I mean, Howard Lutnick spoke at the Bitcoin conference,
yeah,
and almost into an empty room. Like, it was very, people would have known who he was, I think that room would have been full. But, you know, he was the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, and it just wasn't that many people there, but he had some pretty bullish things to say. And so I've heard some stuff about him that he's kind of a cutthroat dude, but for me, most of the CEOs are pretty ruthless, like, especially in the finance world. So like, whatever, I'll take it. We are in such a better position with this administration than we were in the previous. And I just read somebody that was talking about, they were at a Bitcoin conference, and how screwed the Bitcoin world would be if Kamala Harris would have won, and we would be still be fighting all these stupid fights. So I'm, you know, the last 2 weeks have been the craziest 2 weeks in U.S. political history that I'm aware of. And so I'm like, well, at least it's crazy, but it's not against me, like, directly. So I'll take it for now.
Did you hear any of Howard's talk in the past about what happened at 9/11 with his company?
Yeah, like, that's why I was like, man, this guy's got a little bit of heart to him. And then somebody was like, oh, he's ruthless. He's he's cutthroat. And I was like, man, at least he knows, like, I mean, basically him and his sister and his brother were orphaned in his late teens, and he brought in his brother, who was younger than him, when he was in college. And then at 9/11, that brother died because they were hiring people that they liked to work with, and he died in 9/11.
Yeah.
And they're like, holy crap, what a roller coaster. Lose your parents, take in your brother, help raise him, give him a job, and everything's cooking. You love working with him, and then you're not in the building, and he is. Like, you know, there's that's got to have an impact on you, you know?
Well, and it was, what, a third to a half of the company, and it was all the ones that made it rain at the company, right? So all of a sudden,
That's who's at work in the morning.
Yeah, when that disappeared, things had to change. And yeah, it's a really cool story. I mean, I have a lot of respect for what he did. I'm sure he is cutthroat, but most CEOs are. I mean, Elon Musk thing is great. But
it depends Elon on what Musk side you're on.
Yeah,
like when you're on his team or adjacent to it, you're like, this guy's great. If you're on the other side and you lose a negotiation or you lose a deal, like, oh, this guy sucks. So it's, you know, I'll take it with a grain of salt. There have been worse people in with similar power. I'll take it.
Yeah. So going back to this sovereign wealth fund, I think what I've seen is that Trump is asking for it to be created in the next 12 months, right? Which is fair enough. If you compare it to the world's largest sovereign wealth fund out there right now, which is Norway's. Norway holds $400 million in Bitcoin. So that would be a great start, right?
They also hold $500 million in MicroStrategy stock.
Yeah, there you go. So might as well be pretty much $1 billion.
Call it a billion.
Yeah. What's interesting too, Cynthia Loomis, she tweeted out that she called it a big deal on X. And of course, the B in big deal was the Bitcoin B. So there's a lot of excitement there. I mean, there's nothing set in stone that Bitcoin's going to be a part of this or how it competes with the strategic reserve conversation, but it is still pretty exciting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. So I looked and dug into this a little bit, and it sounded like the TikTok deal. Trump was like, look, TikTok's worth nothing in America if we don't figure out a way to make it work by the government. So if the government figures out a way to so that TikTok is allowed in the US, then it's worth $200 billion or something. It's like, why doesn't the U.S. get a little piece of that? And so this seems like it grew out of that, because they keep mentioning that some kind of a TikTok relationship, whether it's payouts or equity or whatever. Do I want the government owning companies in America? No, I don't. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, his whole thing right now is the United States is being taken advantage of. Canada's got an unfair trade imbalance, Mexico, China, et cetera. And so, you know, basically all these companies are building wealth on the U.S., on the backs of U.S. taxpayers, and the U.S. taxpayers not getting anything back outside of the stock market. But quite frankly, you know, what is it? 30% of the population has exposure to the stock market, and 80% of it is held by the top 5% or some imbalance like that. And so if they can figure out a way to do it so that it makes sense and it's not like it doesn't get out of capitalism, that would be okay. It's one of those things where, yeah, this sounds great as long as the guy at the top and the administration is something I can buy. But if Biden and the blue team is back in control, then, and they're just going to pick winners and losers and things like that, I don't know that I like it. So I'm kind of mixed up. I don't know. It's going to require congressional approval or a law to be passed. And I'm not sure if that's going to be able to happen in kind of the way that it's talked about right now, but we're kind of shaking everything up right now. So this feels like another shakeup thing, and where it falls may not be anywhere near where, you know, where it sounds like it is right now. But if you look at like how the government completely screwed up the Social Security lockbox, I'm sure that they can totally screw up a sovereign wealth fund even if they build a good one over the next 4, 8, 12 years.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. I mean, it's exciting that they're talking about it. We'll see how they execute on it. Right? The U.S. government does not have a history of doing things the right way, for sure. Speaking of Strategic Reserve, though, South Dakota threw their name in the hat. They're going to be debating on adding Bitcoin to their strategic reserve. They pretty much came out and called it now is one of the few chances that the government has to be proactive. So, which I mean is a very good statement. Yeah. So that's exciting. I mean, we continue to add more states. I think the goal was to get to what, 25 this year is what we were thinking ish, something like that. So we've got a few more to go to get there.
Yeah. There's a website, Bitcoin States of America, that keeps track of it, and they have a nice map. And I actually looked at it right before this because it seems like every day more states are popping in and I'm not keeping up with it very well. And we're up to 20 states that have proposed legislation for Bitcoin strategic reserve. So it's like some of them are going to pass.
Yeah.
And some states that I would have expected to see, like Georgia, because Georgia's got a lot of mining, Bitcoin mining. Tennessee, they just, you know, they're a zero property tax state. They got a lot of hydroelectric. You know, there's a lot of reasons for Tennessee. I mean, Nashville held the Bitcoin conference. Both senators from Tennessee were there. Those are federal government and this is state government, but still there were state representatives there. So I'm surprised Tennessee's not on the list. West Virginia's got coal and that kind of power. And then like Colorado, same deal. California with the tech side. So like, I think we get to 25 proposed in the next couple of weeks. Like there's some states that should be pushing this through that just haven't yet.
Yeah, I think it'd be great to actually see some pull the trigger on it rather than just talk about it though too.
Yeah. I mean, that's a thing, is a lot of things get proposed, but you got so in state legislation, you have so many old people. It's like that it might be pretty tough.
So some other really positive things that are happening. It's crazy that all this is kind of just falling at the same time. I don't know if you watched or heard about Jerome Powell's discussion about banks should be allowed to offer crypto services to customers.
I did. Like, yeah, I saw that.
I mean, that's amazing that the Fed is coming out and saying this, especially after Checkpoint 2.0. And he also hinted that another interest rate cut could happen if inflation can continue to cool. So there's a lot of stuff going on right there.
Yeah, I keep thinking about this stuff. That one, a lot of government employees just kind of change their tune based on who's in charge. As just my anecdotal experience in life is their political positions and the way they talk and stuff changes every 4 years or so. And so when the other guy's on the top, and Jake Powell's kind of got to play the game, saying like, yeah, if banks understand the risk, that there's no reason they can't hold Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies and do it safely and things like that. So, I mean, you know, he wouldn't say that if Kamala had won, right? Like, he would be saying that, and he would be counter to all the narrative coming from the government. So he just wouldn't talk about it. But now that you've got the winds have changed, he's willing to raise his voice a little bit.
Well, speaking of politics, we talked a lot about Fairshake, the super PAC that was focused on crypto in the 24 elections. They spent $300 million on political campaigns. They have already raised $116 million for the midterm elections in 2026. What's crazy is the previous largest midterm spend by any group was $18 million. So, I mean, you're talking about a 6x multiplier. And that was by the realtors in a midterm, right? So this is crazy. I mean, politics and crypto are going to be very well connected for quite some time at this point.
Yeah. And honestly, if you look at some of the stuff that Doge is finding and how all this money's seeping out into these programs that don't make any sense. And I think that if they can keep that pressure on, then the incumbents might have a shot at keeping the House and the Senate in the midterms. Now, we're a long way away from that, but the Doge experiment is over in July of next year. And that you could just see, you know, them pounding that, you know, how much money has been lost. Well, look what we did when we had all three branches, or the House, the Senate, and the presidency. Look what we were able to do. Look at the saving. Like, yes, even if it's $500 billion, which the only defense that the blue team can say against that is, well, it's only 10% of the annual spend and da da da, but it's still $500 billion. And it's money that's been wasted on garbage. And so I think you start putting some things together. If you can wreck, like if you can rearrange things now, right, do the tariff stuff, push people around, get some new things laid out, all the stuff that's going on in the immigration shakeup stuff and all of that gets kind of settled out. And then you're, you know, for the midterms, you're like, look, we were voted in for the immigration thing. Here you go. We're voted in to clean up some government stuff. Here you go. I mean, if they can actually deliver on that, they might have a shot at keeping everything. And if you give, at the speed at which this stuff's going right now, if you gave 4 years of this, it would be, we could be in a totally different world. Now, when it comes to Bitcoin, when things happen too fast, like Silk Road and El Salvador and, you know, MicroStrategy for the first 3 years, when things happen too fast, it looks pretty crummy. So I'm constantly concerned about, like, hey, are we going to move too fast and the United States jumps into Bitcoin too early and it gets real clumsy, choppy, volatile, things like that. So, you know, that may be me, just the fear of success sometimes. Like, what do you do when you get it?
All of that has had zero regulation, zero government involvement during all of it, right? So I think that if you can just set a couple of guardrails and say, do this and don't do that, then it makes sense and you give people a chance to innovate. But when you say, all right, we've already given you everything you need to know and no one understands what that is, then we're just going to come after you whenever you try to innovate, then that's a problem.
We're going to try to put you out of business every time you do anything, but we're not going to tell you what the rules are.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I listen, I get it, but I can't, it's not in my nature to be like, every single thing is good. Like, I mean, literally I'm turning real estate into Bitcoin and Bitcoin's at 100,000. So I'm pretty bullish. Now should I be, I don't know, you know, like there's always something that can go wrong, but it's, we're definitely in a new world. Like the difference that Washington is bringing to the table now versus where we were, I mean, I don't think it could be understated. Like the SAB 121 rule that's been negated, or, you know, whatever they did, it's not a law. I mean, it's not even an executive order. I think they came out with SAB 122 and just said forget 121. But that's going to be huge. If you have a Bitcoin account with your Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Chase, JP Morgan, whatever, and you're seeing Bitcoin all the time, but you don't have Bitcoin exposure, you know, that's much different than every 4 years you read an article or two or hear about Bitcoin from the fringes, right? And that's where it's been for the last 16 years, is it's been on the fringe. And you know, 2017, you hear about it. When it first broke 1,000, it made the USA Today. But, you know, the bear market, 90% of the population wasn't hearing about Bitcoin when Bitcoin went after the fall of FTX and all that. So they went like 2 years without hearing about it.
Well, what's crazy is, I mean, Bitcoin's at $100,000 and still there are a lot of people that have no idea what it is. I know we talked about trying to do the Bitcoin standard and maybe even the fiat standard, talking about that in the next week or so. There is so much information that people are lacking on just understanding how the US dollar works in this economy, right? So much less how Bitcoin would work. So I think that needs to change, hopefully with so much involvement from government that maybe people will be open to changing because they see it as more plausible, but I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, if the government comes out and says, hey, we're going to create a Bitcoin strategic reserve, that eliminates one of the big concerns from people that don't understand it, that the government's not going to allow this, right? Yep. And so that, I think, will be a big flip. We'll see. I mean, like, there's some pretty major glaciers that are moving that have been blocking Bitcoin. And so, honestly, my theory in my head is that's why Saylor went from a three-year plan to the same dollar value, but let's compress it and get in as soon as we can, because, you know, once this train leaves the station, sometimes it never returns. You know, I can't imagine us seeing $40,000 Bitcoin again. Like, that seems impossible based on the buy. I mean, it seems like anything under 100,000 gets bought up really quick. So, you know, once it's gone, you don't see those prices again.
I think a $40,000 Bitcoin means that there is something very bad going on in the world. And people are going to be way more worried about what the price of Bitcoin is at that point.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like something, there's global economic collapse and nobody's got any money or any confidence to put money into Bitcoin. So I mean, you got to think about it. There's plenty of opportunities to buy in the 40s in the last 12 months, you know, like a lot of people didn't. Yeah. So I think we'll see that. And once the government comes out and we actually, if they do establish a Bitcoin, anything, if Bitcoin's in the sovereign wealth fund, if Bitcoin's part of a strategic reserve or a stockpile, it doesn't matter, anything, and we're good. So once that narrative flips, I don't think it'll flip back just because a new president steps in. I think that they'll have too many people on board, too many citizens, too many voters, and it'll be gone.
Well, shoot, look at the SEC now. They just fast-tracked the approval for Bitwise's Bitcoin and Ethereum ETF, right? So it's going to be 83% Bitcoin, 70% Ethereum, and they're fast-tracking a crypto ETF. Like, that doesn't happen.
That was the opposite. Like, they were slow-playing every ETF prior to this administration.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's crazy. And then even Kraken, who... What they were fined $30 million in 2023 by the SEC and had to stop staking for U.S. customers has reinstated crypto staking, right? So they're calling it bonded staking this time, but it will still include Ethereum, Solana, Cardano, Polkadot. I mean, I think that's where you and I had Polkadot staked back in the day. So, yeah, I mean, and shoot, speaking of Polkadot, there's going to be a Polkadot ETF now too.
I saw that.
21 shares filed for a Polkadot ETF, but it was interesting. The Bloomberg analyst said that this is up there with probably the most hate he's seen any ETF get. So, which is saying a lot at this point, right? I mean, there's been some hate that some of these ETFs have gotten for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about Polkadot in a year, it feels like. I mean, it's just kind of been in the background doing nothing. So, well, in the background doing stuff, but not, I don't know anything that they've done.
Yeah, I mean, so for those of you that aren't aware, Polkadot was started by an ex-Ethereum founder. So both Charles Hoskin from Cardano and Gavin Wood from Polkadot were both original founders at Ethereum and left to do something a little bit different that they thought was better than what Ethereum was doing. So it's got some cool things. They've had a decent amount of activity and they're trying to do a lot more interop between a lot of these chains. So we'll see what happens. But I mean, I think interop between everything is ideal for sure, if it will ever really happen. And it's getting there just slowly.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, they've been doing stuff, but I mean, it's just not in the news. Like when we hit a altcoin cycle and everybody's talking about altcoins and, you know, it'll be in the news, but it doesn't get on my radar. Like Twitter's algorithm's not so good that it just gives me Bitcoin stuff. I do get some crypto stuff in there. And I haven't seen Polkadot outside of the ETF thing in a long time.
Yeah. So speaking of some companies, SoFi just announced that they have some plans for a very aggressive crypto return. I think as soon as they hear up a little bit more positive news from the government, which I don't know how much more positive news they need. But if you look at what they did before, I mean, they used to allow trading on about 20 different assets, but they stopped in 2023 thanks to the SEC and their worry about the regulation by enforcement. So that's exciting to see that coming back.
Yeah, if you were a bank under that previous administration, you needed to be real cautious, because if you're friendly to crypto, they might just shut you down on a Sunday.
Yeah. Tesla had some good gains in Q4 with the new accounting rule for digital assets. They showed a $600 million gain in Q4. I think their estimated value is somewhere just under $1.2 billion in Bitcoin. So good for them.
Yeah, they didn't have a very good earnings call, but the $600 million from the Bitcoin gains under the new FASB rule kind of helped cushion that. And the stock price rebounded pretty quickly. So, you know, Bitcoin helps. It's not a lot of people that have Bitcoin for a long time and are ticked off about it. The MicroStrategy earnings call this week will be the final earnings call under the old FASB rules. So the next one is in May, which, if everything works the way it usually works, May should be we should have a higher Bitcoin price than we do now, and their earnings call might be nuts.
Yeah, goodness. Time to load up. Got it. Another NASDAQ tech company, Nuve, announced that it's going to buy Bitcoin with 30% of its reserve cash. So add it to the list. We're counting the number of public and private companies that are going to be adding more Bitcoin to their reserves too, which is exciting.
Yeah, I saw Semler Scientific added like 80-something million dollars this week just buying with excess cash. And it didn't look like it was an equity play, or it wasn't a convertible note. So I think that they just quarterly earnings and turned it into Bitcoin. Like, I think the more that these corporations get into it, the more I really understand that they don't care what the Bitcoin price is. They're not waiting for a dip. They're just, all right, let's start buying. Like, we got extra cash, let's buy it. And the more companies do that, the more I think some individuals will do that. Like, I'm always looking for like a dip to buy. Like, it's in my DNA to not just buy things at full price. Like, if I'm grocery shopping, I'm not buying stuff at full price. So I'm always kind of looking for a little buying opportunity to add some value. So for me to see these corporations and eventually El Salvador, they don't look at the price. They just buy. So the more I understand that some people are going to do that, and that's good for Bitcoin price.
Yeah. Speaking of El Salvador, they added 52 Bitcoin in this year already, which I think their plan was to do one Bitcoin per day. And we have not had 52 days in 2025 yet. So they promised to scale back to get a $1.4 billion loan from the IMF. Yet they're not really scaling back their Bitcoin buys. They're kind of doing the opposite of that. And I think just not forcing everybody to have to accept Bitcoin in the country.
Yeah, but they did drop it as legal tender, and everything's volunteer there. So they did make some changes, but it does seem like they have no problem continuing to buy, because they're buying, you know, they used to be one a day, and every once in a while they'll buy 11. So I kind of dig it. I like El Salvador. I enjoyed my visit there. And Bukele seems like he's playing ball with the new administration. I saw where I think Marco Rubio went down there to talk, and they're going to be a housing, like, they got all that prison space from when they had the gang stuff. So I think that they're going to be a holding position for illegal immigrants that come out of the United States that are on their way to other places. So if you can buddy up to the United States right now, it seems like a good move. Like, yeah, you know, because I mean, when they added Bitcoin, and you know, it seemed like they were a dollarized country, and now they're a dollarized country that also has Bitcoin. You know, that shook up some stuff. They got some pretty unfavorable attention from IMF and from the US, and they started calling Bukele a dictator and all the civil rights and human rights violations that he created by getting rid of the gangs. Like, so, you know, they just twisted it in the other way. So now honestly, it's a pretty good opportunity to continue the turnaround that country's had. And, you know, Bitcoin's kind of fun because you get to pull for random countries like Bhutan and El Salvador. So I'm pulling for them.
Yeah, it's interesting. The ECB, European Central Bank, just announced that they don't think Bitcoin is fit for a strategic reserve, and that no European countries will add it to their reserves anytime soon. And I think one of their heads said, I'm confident that Bitcoins will not enter the reserves of any of the central banks of the General Council. So they can't actually directly forbid the member states from investing in Bitcoin, but they can enforce it through investigations and sanctions and administrative penalties, kind of like what the SEC did. And then at the same time, what's kind of interesting, the Czech National Bank governor proposed to put $7 billion of its country's wealth into Bitcoin at the same time. So it would be the first Western central bank to hold digital assets, beating the United States to the punch, right? And kind of throwing egg in the face of the ECB president. So that would be funny and great to see if that does happen.
Yeah, I don't know which one came first, like chicken or the egg. Because in the news cycle, I saw the governor of Czech Republic central banks talk about putting up to 5% and proposing, I guess he proposed that they study it or do a you know, kind of like what we're doing in the US with a work group that's going to look at it. And then like the next day, Lagarde is out there talking about how Bitcoin's not suitable for a central bank. So I was like, in my mind, they were responding to the Czech Republic. But the Czech Republic, I mean, they're kind of in a, they're not like a pure Euro member state, right? They have their own currency and things like that. Like, so I'm not sure if they're just, if the Euro guys are just playing defense because that's so close to, you know, you can just drive to the Czech Republic from just about anywhere in Eastern Europe. So I'm curious what that looks like, but get with the program, man. If you're a European, you got very friendly legislation for crypto. You're kind of ahead of the curve on some of that stuff. You got multiple countries that don't do capital gains taxes, and they're very friendly to crypto and Bitcoin. And the Czech Republic's looking into it as a sovereign strategic reserve. Why come out and say, oh, we're still stuck in, you know, 10 years ago and Bitcoin's worthless? That's a real weird move when all the tides are moving out and you're going to be sitting on the beach. So I don't get it. Some of these politicians just have to get punched in the face and they don't see the punch coming, or the banks just funnel money to them. You know what I mean? It's got to be something like that. It's too obvious that the shift in sentiment is going away from Bitcoin's worthless, Bitcoin's no good for this and that, it's a nefarious use only. Like, all of that stuff's going away. How long do these people wait before they jump on board and just ride it? Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, so the Czech Republic has been part of the EU since like 2004. So they're definitely part of the European Union. What's interesting is it seems like throughout the EU, a lot of these countries always seem to have one or two people in politics that are big into crypto. Like, there was that lady in Germany that when Germany sold all their Bitcoin, she was like, what are you doing? You guys are idiots, right? So it was like the only sane person apparently in Germany, yet they don't have the majority there yet. What's crazy is, I mean, with MiCA, they look to be in the forefront of crypto, and now it's almost like they're going backwards. So it's probably a little frustrating for people over there right now.
Yeah, and MiCA came out when things were negative in the United States. So yeah. It doesn't make sense. Not much of this makes sense. But you're going to have people, you know, the Czech Republic pops up. Norway, you know, there's $1 billion worth of Bitcoin exposure. And so I think that some people will see chip away. And then some politicians are going to look at the United States. Like, oh man, look at all of these pro crypto politicians who won their elections, and I'm sure that the European voters aren't that far away. So why not run on a pro crypto stance, or at least have it as part of the, you know, what you're running on? And so maybe we're just an election cycle or two away from Europe jumping on board.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see for sure. I mean, you are seeing at least Coinbase is partnering with a lot of other countries, I would say outside of Europe. Argentina is one of the ones that they just agreed to enter, which that one makes sense. They got an approval to offer digital asset services in the UK, which is not really officially part of Europe anymore. I guess not part of the European Union, it's part of the continent of Europe, but they're definitely doing things a little bit different than the rest of the EU. All right. Oh, the other thing that was interesting too, we talked about Tether earlier. There is some plans to bring USDT, Tether, to Bitcoin. Right now, Tether's already on 17 other blockchains. So once again, kind of going back to the Howard Lutnick has a tie to a lot of this. And it's going to be interesting to see how that happens and what it does for Bitcoin and Tether at the same time.
Yeah, it just right out of the gate, that doesn't seem like a good fit. It's like Tether on Tron is probably the biggest user of Tether because it's fast and cheap, and then people don't seem to care much about it being safe or decentralized. So maybe there's so much stuff going on in the background that I don't understand as far as the technical side of these things. And, you know, even all the way down to these like batched transactions where like on Fold, if you withdraw your Bitcoin from your Fold account, it's like, oh, we do rewards withdrawals on Tuesday. So on Tuesday, they do one transaction and it may have 1,000 components to it. And so that the transaction fee is split. And honestly, right now, the transaction fees are rock bottom because the mempool's empty. So it's worth mentioning. Now's a great time to move Bitcoin around because it's almost free. But that, you know, if they can figure out a way to do it so that it's cheap and secure, to me, it's why not?
Yeah, I mean, what Tron did take a ton of the usage for Tether, and most people in the U.S. don't trust Tron. So if you put it on Bitcoin, then all of a sudden Tether gets a lot more people trusting it, I guess, right? Which the problem is, I think Circle and Tether, or USDC and USDT, are kind of fighting to see who gets to win. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I do think that the Tether is going to be looked upon favorably by this government. Like, we've got $10 trillion worth of treasuries that are maturing this year because Janet Yellen pushed everything to the short term and interest rates are high. And so these treasuries are rolling over. And who's going to buy them, right? You got countries that were sanctioned by the Biden administration, or countries that would fear that they would buy these treasuries and then they would be made worthless if they didn't act right, or countries that are getting tariffed 25% or threatened to be tariffed by 25% by the United States. So I mean, like, you're running out of buyers for these treasuries. But Tether's probably the only buyer of treasuries that is increasing their purchases.
Yeah.
And so maybe that helps, you know, Tether get some favorable help from the government.
So there's some interesting Cardano news. They hard forked and provided, I guess their constitution got passed, and they hard forked, provided a really true decentralized governance now. So the owners of the tokens can vote on everything that does happen. That's kind of great to see. Charles Hoskinson also somehow he released an address in one of his addresses. So someone created a meme coin called Charles, sent him 900 billion of these tokens, which was 90% of the supply. So on a live screen, he wrote a script and had them sent to a burner address, which effectively wiped out like $80 million of book value of these tokens so that nothing can happen with them, which is kind of funny to see. So yeah, always some good stuff. And I think there's a ton of things being talked about in February, at least with Cardano, where they are in the midst of a potential partnership. And they can't talk about it now. Ripple's been thrown out there. Internet Computer has been thrown out there. So it'll be interesting to see if come March, they can actually talk about some of this stuff too and see what's happening with interoperability between a lot of this stuff. I mean, they're already working on creating Cardano and Bitcoin, kind of linking those together a little bit easier too. So I guess we'll see.
So yeah, we'll see. And it's interesting, like, okay, so he burned those tokens. So that's like another one of these meme coiny, I don't know, celebrity sponsored hawk to a Trump coin things that isn't working. Because like Trump coin and Melania coin didn't work. I think Trump coin's down into the teens. So you got a lot of people losing money on that. And so, you know, we talk about, you know, kind of what's going to be the crypto kitties or the tease of this cycle, and I don't know that it's going to be meme coins because they're adding like a million a month and it's scattered so thin. I don't think that any of them will capture enough fund flow to get the market cap up to the point that it's going to kind of break through the ice and get into the real world. So I'm kind of curious to see what emerges. And you know, is it real world assets this cycle, or you know, or are we not ready for it, or you know, which one's going to be the new kid on the block that really makes an impact and people outside of crypto hear about it and know about it, you know?
Well, meme coins move so fast. If you're not literally attached to Twitter, following everything in real time, and you don't get in as one of the first ones, I mean, it's all happening in 24, maybe 48 hours, right? It's just so quick. And if you don't take the profits, they disappear very quickly too.
Right. So yeah, like Doge managed to go from a meme coin, Joe, into like the top 10 by market cap in crypto and kind of hang in there And now it's talked about all the time because of what Elon Musk and these, you know, 10 young programmers are doing to root out all of these, you know, kind of waste and grift in politics. So Doge, I think, has escape velocity. I don't think that goes away. Like, it just, it's as crazy funny as that is. But as far as a new one coming out to kind of take over and get into that same kind of similar position, you know, I think it's going to be real tough.
Yeah, it was interesting during all this craziness where everything was dropping. Apparently, the Biden meme coin, like 3 or 4x'd. I guess I saw an article on it. I didn't read too much into it, but I was like, really? So, yeah, not sure what happened.
I don't know. That's so far outside of the stuff I'm paying attention to. Yeah. I couldn't even speculate.
Why it showed up on my feed, I have no idea, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
The other thing, so Gary Gensler got a new job. I don't know if you saw that. So he's back at MIT. He is now teaching about AI. So he screwed up crypto. So now they think he could probably go and help screw up AI, apparently.
Yeah, whatever. Go teach at MIT and we'll restrict your damage to a classroom of, you know, 40 people at a time.
Yeah, and it's almost like, why would MIT hire him after this? And it's just kind of amazing. So.
It's the universities and the government are locked in pretty tight.
And then, so I saw a headline, I couldn't read too much into it, but I hope this really doesn't come true. SBF's parents are trying to get Trump to pardon SBF, which is crazy that that's even being talked about. And that his parents even think that, I think they said that since Trump pardoned Ross, he should pardon SBF too. And I'm like, well, there's a difference here.
Big difference.
SBF didn't steal billions and billions of people's money. Ross actually created something that was worthwhile just a little before its time. So yeah, we'll see what happens with that. I hope Trump doesn't make that mistake and pardon SBF, that's for sure.
Well, the good news is, you know, SBF contributed a ton of money to the other team. So he's not really inclined to help somebody that's been, you know, pushing the other team. And you know, my understanding is he's likely behind a lot of the anti-Bitcoin sentiment and keeping everything out of the banks and all that stuff. So, yeah, also, he hasn't been in jail that long. I mean, you know, let him actually be punished for a little while. I mean, like, a lot of people lost a lot of money because of him. And what he was doing was not just sketchy. It was outright fraud, taking people's money, saying that you have Bitcoin, and then going and trading it and losing it and collapsing an entire market. No. If we're... What did he have? He has like a 20-year sentence or something? 25?
Yeah.
So, you know, if we're 18 years deep and it's like, we're going to commute his sentence, I'm like, okay, well, you know, this guy's been... I feel like he's been in jail for like 18 months. 2 years.
If even that much, right?
Yeah. So, like, you know, I don't know that I'm buying that. Let him cook. Like, you screwed up. You're in jail. Like, you can redeem yourself, but you don't redeem yourself immediately. That's not how redemption works.
Yeah, it's one of those that if he didn't get a pardon from Biden, who gave literally anybody that had a pulse a pardon, I feel like, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's getting one.
No, I think he's going to have to sit in jail for a while. I'm okay with that. Like, the more I think back on how that went down, the more I get kind of ticked off about all the sketchiness that was going on by people that should have known better. You know, these banking guys that are about to get into the game, and like SoFi is going to have a yield. I'm like, hey, man, I know you think you know the rules because you are a bank, but the rules don't work when you can't just get bailed out. The government can't buy you all the Bitcoin that you need to get out of this. It doesn't exist. They can't print enough money to do it. So those banks, they need to get their head on straight because, yeah, they can't be helped. It doesn't work, you know? And so give it to me. I'm ready for the banks to get involved, but I am hopeful that they don't rehypothecate and get themselves in trouble. But if they do, then get them in trouble and people need to go to jail and all that. Like, you can't innovate without making mistakes, right? It's not possible. No, you know, the only reason everybody knows the light bulb story from Thomas Edison, whether it's true or not, you know, that's how it works. You go through 100 things that don't work and you look like a genius who invented something at the end. Like, so yeah, we go through a bunch of stuff that don't work. We sold drugs online. We're just selling in Bitcoin. Like, not a great idea, but it got Bitcoin to be used as a medium of exchange to buy something other than a couple pizzas.
It worked though.
It worked globally. Like, you know, and you know, if you look around, even in El Salvador, you know, it's a struggle to make Bitcoin a medium of exchange. It's not easy. You got to have people that value it on both sides, and have the seller and the buyer have to meet up on what they actually want. And then the technology steps in. Is it on chain or through Lightning? If it's on chain, you're not going to sit around for 10 minutes and make sure it confirms. So it's you know, it's kind of clumsy and things like that. So, you know, that there's value in the mistakes. And this dude, Ross Ulbricht, spent a lot of time in jail and a lot of key years. You know, he's a young guy. And so, you know, why would SBF, who did something way more intentional, like knew what he was doing, you know, driving a Corolla and living in a $20 million penthouse so that he could show people that he's just not spending, he's not interested in money, and he's a philanthropist. It's like, all right, man, you're just a con artist, dude. You're like, you maybe you don't understand it, but that's what you're doing. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm it's fine with me. He can learn his lesson. I mean, that's the way it is. And not only that, if you pardon the guy, the next guy is going to be more emboldened to take more risk and play fast and loose with other people's money, because the consequences aren't really that bad. And, you know, some of these other people get in and out of trouble. You know, if the consequences aren't there, then the likelihood of that behavior repeating itself is pretty high.
Yeah, I hope we don't run into another SBF in our lifetimes, but there's always a chance that something like that will happen.
Well, you know, I mean, it's with inflation being what it is, you got the Bernie Madoffs playing their games and rehypothecating and Ponzi scheming their way, and then SBF does it on a bigger scale. And I mean, the next one's going to be bigger. It's like, it's the same with printing money. Like, the next one's bigger,
which is already a Ponzi scheme pretty much in the U.S. government, but that's a whole other conversation. So
yes.
Well, any other major news that we talked about that we didn't talk about? I guess
we didn't talk about David Sacks as having his first AI press today. AI and Bitcoin crypto press conference today at 2:30, which I'm excited to listen to him talk. He's one of the guys on the All In podcast, so he's been vacant from the All In podcast for weeks, and because he's been in Washington doing all this stuff, I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say after a few weeks of getting his hands dirty. I like the guy. Not everything he says is in line with what I think, but we've never had an AI Bitcoin crypto SAR before, so I want to hear what he has to say. And if he's working as hard as these other guys are working, you know, he's got 80 hours of high productivity work in. So he should be, I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say.
Yeah, he's got to one up all them now. All right. So what's going to be his message to everybody at this point?
Yeah. Everybody else is moving and shaking. What do you got? And then the last thing that isn't major news, but I got a call yesterday. Couldn't quite understand the guy with the accent, but he was from some security group, and he was giving me a warning that someone in the Netherlands was trying to get into my ledger live. And I said, hey, thanks. Nobody's going to get to my Bitcoin. Click. So we talked about it maybe when Bitcoin kind of rose into those $50,000 to $70,000 range. There were some scams going on. There were people, you know, getting taken advantage of. And so here we go again, right? Bitcoin goes up and the scammers accumulate. So just a little heads up on that.
Well, OpenSea had that leak. I think Coinbase has had a ton of people try to do phishing on people, their accounts as well. So there's a lot going on. It's pretty much the only way that these scammers can get in is if you give them access. So just don't give out your seed phrase. Pretty much if Coinbase or whoever else calls, hang up and call back or go to your account and check there, because I get those messages probably once a day, I feel like, of someone's trying to log into my Coinbase account, and that's just not happening. So
yeah, it's going to happen, and people are going to get taken advantage of, because like, honestly, I woke up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and I was like, man, I probably need to check on if that thing was real, you know. And I know it's not real. Ledger doesn't get to call me if there's a problem. Like, that's not how it works. So I'm like, even me, who I know the game, I've listened to that podcast of people trying to scam other people, and like, I know what it sounds like. It sounds just like this guy, and I'm still like in the back of my mind, like, ah, crap, do I have everything I need to do? Like, it's in cold storage. You're not going to bust the encryption. So anyway, that's just a little heads up there, but that's all I got this week.
Yeah, I think what I've seen is, in order to bust the encryption, it would be like winning the lottery 8 times in a row is how lucky you'd have to be able to get it, right? So good luck with that.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, cool. Well, Hal, let's chat again next week. And I mean, who knows what's going to happen at this point? Maybe we'll already buy money in the strategic reserve at this point. We'll see what happens.
Everything's moving fast, man. I've never seen government move like this before.
Yeah. Cool. Well, great talking to you, Hal.
Justin. Thanks, Jason. Good to see you.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.